Welcome to Every Artist Podcast. We are here today. This is your host, Mae Santiago, with Lisa. And we have a special guest today. We have our special guest, famed director, Christine Swanson from the hit movie The Clark Sisters, Black Cora, Love Under New Management on TV One, All About You, and so many others. We are very excited to have her here today. Welcome.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for having me.
We are very excited to talk to you today. Could you just tell us about your start into the film directing world? How did you get started into the business?
Well, I was a freshman at the University of Notre Dame, and Spike Lee came to campus to talk about Do the Right Thing. And when I saw Spike Lee, that was the first time that I realized that people made movies for a living. So I promptly changed my major from finance to filmmaking, and I decided that year that I would also attend NYU Film School, which is where Spike Lee went to film school. And I ended up at NYU, and Spike Lee was my directing teacher my last year there. So it was kind of a full circle moment there, and
wow.
That's how it all started. Yeah.
Wow, that is amazing. To actually listen, you know, to actually get the inspiration from Spike, but then to turn around and be a student under Spike, that had to be something special. I can only imagine the tips and things that you learned just from directly learning from him.
Well, it was like to see someone who was kind of like your mentor from a distance in front of you, actually just doing the day-to-day grind. Like Spike would do things like invite us into the post sound mix for He Got Game. So we're just sitting there, you know, in the studio and watching the process of mixing the sound together. So to just make breaking it down and making it very accessible and tangible, it wasn't hard to then visualize myself as a filmmaker, because ultimately, behind the veil of what seems cool or sexy is a whole lot of work, actually, from writing, directing, editing, promoting, and et cetera. So sometimes I like to demystify the process, because when the rubber meets the road, it's really not about, you know, there are a lot of talented people, but you also have to have some stamina and grit and follow through, you know, to see,
yeah,
you know, your story to fruition. So, you know, it's overly glamorized in many ways, but most days it's just a lot of work, a lot
right.
of work
well,
with that.
With saying that, did you have a moment where you felt like it was too much, or maybe this wasn't true? Did you ever doubt yourself when you were switching from finance over to filmmaking?
You know, honestly, like the moment I decided that like, this is what I wanted to do, and not just to be a filmmaker, I was really driven to the storytelling process with a desire to see people from my community, to tell stories that move me with Black people in it, you know? So I never feel like there's enough of those kind of stories that meet my satisfaction. In many ways, I feel like there's too much work to be done. So I'm not easily discouraged by the hardship. And in fact, I don't know how to quit. So it's once I decided that this is what I was going to do, I just turned it up and I just never have been able to turn it back down. And even after I took 15 years off to raise my four children, you know, there was a lull where I wasn't actively working, but I was always creative. I was always a storyteller, if even in my head, and even if on paper, I was just writing stories without being able to actually make them. So that creative part never shut down, you know. And now increasingly I've just gotten back into directing a little bit more, and it's kind of just ramped up even more in terms of my own desire and ability to keep telling stories at a very, very high level.
Wow. Could you tell us a little bit about, I was doing some research and I saw that one of your first movies, All About You, it said that you were a part of the writing process in that movie as well.
Yeah, I'm a writer, director, and producer. So, you know, I wrote and directed All About You, and that was my first feature film. Uh-huh.
Where did the inspiration for that story come from?
Well, you know, it's funny because the story is essentially about a heartbroken girl who leaves Los Angeles and goes to San Francisco to kind of rehabilitate her emotions, so to speak. But in the process of doing that, learns to find love again by helping somebody else heal. So it was directly based on one of my friends who was having a hard time in her relationship. And, like, the lead character's name is Nicole, and this is where I'm not imaginative. I'm not good with names of characters, so I just named her Nicole. So it was directly based on my friend, you know, and that was kind of like the inspiration. But sometimes I just like to do that. It's like I see stories everywhere. You know, like in the Sixth Sense, they're like, I see dead people.
Right.
I kid you not. Like, I look around and I just see stories upon stories upon stories, and especially, you know, within our own community and my friends and relatives. It's just never ending. Like, to me, everybody has an interesting story. My job as a storyteller and a writer and as a director is properly frame it so it works within the confines of great storytelling.
Wow.
Well, takes a lot of creativity. Absolutely.
Yes. It's just like the process that a lot of songwriters use inspiration from around them, like great songwriters. They can take a story from somebody else's life that they're directly connected to and just create a whole masterpiece or, you know, and it's the same. It's like the same process. Speaking of singers, I just want to say that you did a magnificent job under For Love Under New Management, the Mickey Howard story. That was amazing.
Oh.
Amazing.
Oh, thank you.
It was like the first time watching a biopic on a cable network and just being excited. And then after watching it and saying, like, this is nowhere near like the Aaliyah movie or anything like that. This was like top notch. And you could tell that you guys put a lot of work into making that story come to life.
Yeah.
It's beautifully done. Just have to say that.
I'm particularly proud of that because it's funny because it's like we had no money and no time, you know, like not a lot. And one of the things that I just felt, I felt very precious about honoring our legends. You know, it's like we're raised to respect our elders, right? So I'm just like, we got to do this right for Mickey Howard. So the first thing that I asked was to be, when I was hired, was to be in touch, put me in touch with Mickey Howard. You know, that's what I asked. And I started to talk to Mickey. And like over the course of like 3 or 4 days, we talked on the phone for like 50 hours.
Wow.
And I really, really got to know her. And in many ways, she got to know me. In knowing her, I got to rework the script, you know, and I got to infuse more of her into the storytelling because up until that time, it wasn't done like that, you know. And for me, I just felt like a conduit. You know, I can't jump in here and pretend to be the master of Mickey Howard's life. So it's very important that Mickey was infused into the process. And once we were able to do that, it's like the story came to life in a way that was more deeply personal for and to Mickey. And the rest of it, again, my job is to facilitate the proper storytelling, and it just kind of flowed in a better way because Mickey was so involved hands-on. So I had a lot of fun making that. We had no money. We had 15 days to shoot. We shot it all in Savannah, Georgia. And, I mean, in hindsight, you know, it seemed like a very tough shoot. But, you know, then I went on to the Clark sisters, and I can tell you that was 10 times harder. So it was like you just build. You're just building muscles no matter how hard to do the next thing. And nobody knew I was going to do the Clark sisters back then, but it absolutely set me up having done a biopic at a smaller network to then jump to a bigger network and then do a biopic about the Clark sisters. So it was great experience to do that. And I'm very happy that people like you received it.
Yeah,
well.
It translated. It really translated. The hard work that you guys put into it definitely translated for us as the watchers, people that tuned in to watch it. Because now just hearing you say that you guys did not have a budget and you only had a short amount of time to film this project, and then looking at the movie, I'm just like, wow, it's just a testament of your skills. That, you know, just to make that come off as it was a higher budget and you had more time to make it work. Because we definitely wouldn't have known that unless you told us, because it was really good.
Thank you. So, thank you. I appreciate that.
And speaking of the Clark sisters, congratulations on the, award season. I know you guys are going to sweep award season. I've seen some of the articles come out about the mentions for the Emmys, Best Movie Picture, Best Television Movie, Best Actress in a Limited Series. I'm for sure seeing this happen for you guys, but I'm thinking you guys are going to win more than just the Emmys. I think you guys are going to just sweep through the whole award season and just get everything, because it was just magnificent the way you guys pulled it together. Could you tell us about the process of working on that movie with the Clark sisters and how working with Mary J. Blige, Queen Latifah, Missy Elliott, Holly Carter, and how you guys all kind of like made that happen?
Well, I was brought on board and hired by the producers in the network, and like for 15 years, the producer Holly Carter tried to get the film off the ground, and she could not for one reason or another. And then she connected with Queen Latifah, and Queen Latifah came on board, and Lifetime immediately greenlit it. And then Mary J. Blige and Missy Elliott came on board as executive producers. And, you know, I had a few conversations with Queen Latifah, but mainly I worked with Shakim, who runs Flavor Unit, you know. And I personally have never met Queen Latifah, Mary J. Blige, or Missy Elliott. So they were the power brokers who got the project greenlit. So they were like magnificent executive producers in that way. Like their names were used to greenlight it and to market the movie.
Right.
But in terms of the hands-on day-to-day production, that was mostly through Holly Carter, who was like on the ground type producers and the Lifetime executive. So, and another producer, Loretta Jones. So we were the hands-on team working in Toronto with talent and crew. So it all started off with the script, and then once they cast Anjanou Ellis, you know, I came up with the idea to cast all singers instead of actors to lip sync the music. And, you know, because I did Mickey Howard, I had experience with that. Tiana Paris lip sync the music. But even back then, I had an idea of trying to cast a real singer. We just could not pull that off in time, and given our lower budget, it just would have made the cost greater to try to do that. And then, you know, the cost to go to a recording studio and lay down all the vocals. So that was not plausible or possible with Nikki Howard. With Clark Sisters, once we had Anjanou Ellis on board, who was a big name for the network, I suggested we cast gospel singers. And nobody really understood the logic of that because it's just harder. Why would we do that? Why would we want to cast people who have no acting experience, you know? And I really had to break it down to the network that this is gospel music. And what you lose when you have actors lip sync gospel music is a visceral connection to the storytelling. And I went about and I proved it to them. I flew out to Detroit and met with Kiera Shears, and I had Shalaya Frazier, who played Dorinda, fly to Detroit and meet me. And at that point, you know, the network wasn't really keen on hiring singers. So I had Kiera and Shalaya sit at a keyboard and sing a song. So they sang, "I'm looking for a miracle." Okay, I can't sing, but that's the song. And I videotaped it, sent it to the producers, and they sent it to the network, and they were blown away. And so what I said to them is, if you are blown away from a videotape of these girls singing, like, impromptu, imagine what you would feel if we properly set them up and they're singing on camera for real. And that right. was the end of it. They were like, we get it, cast singers. And Donald Lawrence, the great producer that he is, you know, really helped me figure out what vocal qualities that I needed to find so that he can create the Clark Sisters blend. So, because once right. he said that he could do it, I knew that I had to go down that path. And what I ended up doing was when all the singing part was being recorded and shot, I made sure that when we shot close-ups of the girls singing, that I made them sing live. And throughout the movie, there are moments where they just break out in song, you know, impromptu, like when they sing about Henry, when they're in the hospital and they sing Praying Spirit, when they're doing runs in the hallway with, you know, a young Drew Sheard and Kiera and Karen and Christine, and Christina Bell.
Christina Bell.
Yeah, they're doing that live. When they're demonstrating to Dr. Maddie Moss Clark, like, this is a new song that we created called You Brought the Sunshine. Every one of those singing pieces are done live. So there was something – so when you record something live and you watch it, and especially people like yourself who are familiar with probably Clark Sisters music and gospel music, when you saw that, like, people were immediately more connected to the storytelling because they were like, oh, my gosh, the singing is so great, you know? And a lot of that had to do with the fact that these were gospel singers, one. And two, there were many moments in the storytelling where they were singing live. So you could feel the connection to the story because they brought you in through their vocal abilities. So that was something that it was just kind of an instinct that I had to shoot it live. And I think that's part of the reason why people resonated so much with the singing. You know, I got a call from Jamie Foxx, and he was like, wow, what you did in this movie was amazing. You know, the singing was on point. I grew up on the Clark Sisters, and you nailed it. He was like, this is the best movie I've seen in the last 15 years.
I must say that it really was. I just like Ramay said, that it was a better tribute than what they did for Aaliyah or even Whitney Houston. Your casting was awesome. I didn't even know Raven could sing, and I've seen her in other shows and stuff. So the casting, I was going to ask you how you went about it, but you already answered. I'll just put in my 2 cents that I would love to be on your payroll next time you make a movie.
Well, let me add some nuance.
Listen,
to the casting.
No budget or not.
Well, when it came to the casting and they let me cast singers, well, Donna Lawrence, in talking with them, because I asked them, what do I need or what do you need to create the Clark Sisters blend without the Clark Sisters, like with other singers? And he told me I needed 3 kinds of vocalists. And once he explained that what that was, and I explained to the network, I went about casting 3 people as singers, and the network was like, well, then we can cast 2 people who are actors. And I'm like, okay, we could do that. So I ended up casting Kiera Sheard, Shalaya Frazier, and then we found Christina Bell, because she submitted to Lifetime, and when I saw her tape, I was like, yeah, she's it. And then, as a bonus, we found Jackie, the character, Angela Burchett, who played Jackie, and the thing about Angela was she's a Broadway actress. But technically, mm-hmm. I was able to cast an actress, but she also was an amazing singer, and she sang directly under Maddie Moss Clark. So I had 4 singers, even though I needed, and then Raven was the only actress that I cast who wasn't a singer. So it's the 4 other sisters who laid down the vocals who were the singers, and Raven was the only actress. And the reason why I cast Raven, immediately when I saw her audition, Raven starred in my 2nd feature film when she was 12 years old. It's called All About Us. And when I saw that Raven had auditioned, Raven was my first choice to play Denise because I was like, I knew how great she was, and I relished the opportunity to work with her again. So Raven was my only one who wasn't the singer, but she's such a good actress. In all the parts where they do sing back the vocals, she's lip-syncing.
Oh, okay. Well, she did a great job doing that.
She sure did.
Well, we have.
I also like how at the end of the movie, you brought back the Clark Sisters, the 3 of them, that to sing the final song. That was amazing.
Right. Right.
Like
and that
full
was
circle
like,
moment.
We just went back and forth. Could we get the Clark Sisters? And can we get them all there? They were only there for 1 day. And it was a crazy day, and I think Twinkie was ill, so we weren't able to get Twinkie. And the question came up, like, should we do this even though we don't have Twinkie? I was like, absolutely, yes,
yeah.
Yes, we're gonna do this. And I figured out a way to shoot the girls and then transition the real sisters, so it became like a little bit of a surprise, you know.
Yeah. We have Angela Burchett come in on Friday. She's an amazing singer and actress. So we're excited about having a chance. Yeah, amazing.
And she's a hard worker, too.
Yeah.
And she was very it was just nice having her on set because of she had a lot of acting experience on Broadway. So when you're working with new people who have never acted before, it's a lot to kind of manage, and so finding somebody like Angela who had experience and maturity and eagerness, she really held it down. And
how was that process with Christina Bell? I know this is her first. I know she's done plays before, but this is like her first feature film where she's like, you know. So how was that process of bringing the Twinkie out of her?
Well, half the battle was finding the right vocalist, right? So, and you had to look the part. And that's
right.
Why when I saw Christina's audition tape, Christina naturally has that gap in her tooth,
mm-hmm.
and she can blow. she can blow. She can really, really, really sing at that right level, right? So that's two parts of a whole. And Christina Bell has an ability to really tap into, like, her emotional side. So all those scenes where we needed to have some emotional undergirding, she could tackle that so easily, right? So it just felt natural and fluid for Christina Bell to play Twinkie, and she just fit in beautifully. So, and she did a great job. And the funny thing is, you know, there are a lot of singing pieces to this, and like, I'm not musically inclined. I don't sing. I don't write per se, music. So there would be times where I would over direct. I would over-explain, beat by beat by beat. Then you got to do this, 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 this. And when it came to all the singing parts, Christina would always go, she would, like, tap me on my shoulder and say, "We got this, Christina." I'm like, okay, great. All right? So she was great in that she reassured me on many occasions. When it came to the singing part, we got this.
Yeah. I think seeing her in this film, it seems like there's a new career path that I think she should really tap into. Just seeing, like you said, those emotional parts where she really, like the scene where Maddie is trying to get Twinkie to stay and not go with her new husband, that was a very powerful scene. And I mean, you couldn't watch that without feeling every emotion, anger, sadness. I mean, that was a very powerful scene. And I think
I was upset.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think everybody was upset.
My mama would be like, "Brother, you got to go."
I know. Well, part of the magic, well, I won't say part of, a big part of the magic of that scene was Anjanue Ellis. And let me explain why. She's such a generous, and she knew she was working with less experienced actors. And you could talk to, you'll see when you talk to Angela Bichette and ask her about what was it like working with Anjanue Ellis. It's like every day she was putting on a clinic. But what she would do specifically, like especially in scenes with Christina, and that scene on the staircase when she was leaving, what Anjanue did was she would lean in to her face a little bit more. And maybe, like, sometimes she would go off script, and it's almost like she would antagonize her, you know? Like, just go at her. Like, so the parts that you would see on camera would be when they were maybe saying their actual lines. But on different angles, and you don't always see Anjanue, and you just see Twinkie, like Anjanue would just get in her face, just get at her, get at her, get at her, until Christina felt very, very uncomfortable. You know, she felt very uncomfortable, and she was forcing herself to tap into her emotional side, but that uncomfort or discomfort made her even a little bit agitated and angry and scared. And you can see that on camera.
Right.
So do you see how working opposite a great actress can bring real and raw emotions out?
Right.
That you may or may not have the skill set to utilize, but when the other actress is forcing you to not think about acting and all you're thinking about is how uncomfortable I'm really feeling, well, guess what? That looks like great acting. And I dare say, she really felt uncomfortable, and she was scared.
I'm going to watch it again.
And it showed on camera.
Yeah, Anjanue Ellis is, I mean, she's amazing. I mean, she just, I mean, everything else she does is literally amazing. But seeing this film and how she just basically took on Maddie Moss Clark and just basically, like, you really thought she was Maddie Moss Clark. Like, another scene that took me out was the scene when Denise had to tell her mom she was pregnant. I mean, I gasped for air when Maddie walked in the room. I was scared for myself. I was scared like I was actually in the room with him. I was like, it was so powerful. He was like, what is Maddie going to do? You know, I mean, she really embodied that role. It's just amazing, you know.
No, the part when she just snuck up on me, see, when she was talking about being out, that was
right. Yeah, that was amazing.
Yep.
And so, there's so many layers to that story.
It is. And then that scene where Denise had to tell us she was pregnant, again, it was emotionally engineered by Ingenue Ella. And see, a lot of times Ingenue likes to play against the expectation, right? So the expectation being, mom, I'm pregnant. Everybody's scared of what the mother would think. And so you're ready for her to explode, right?
Mm-hmm.
And instead, the sisters explode on her, right? And then when she tells her mother, mom, I'm pregnant, it's like the opposite response.
Right.
And she's like, so what? We got a show to do, right? So it just changes the underpinning of the emotions and the expectations of the audience in a way that's even more gut-wrenching. Like,
right.
Oh, my gosh. She still got to go out there and sing. What is Maddie thinking? And then cut to, we have all the girls singing, Is My Living in Vain? And each and every one of them are individually tortured by the news that they just received.
Right.
And then we cut to Maddie in the audience watching, and you know, like, her head is spinning and her world is just turned upside down. So it was just fun to play with emotional expectations and then flipping it in a way that just kept the intrigue flowing in the storytelling. And that was possible by, again, my good fortune of working with pretty much somebody in a class by herself right now. I don't know who rivals her in terms of her talent. You know, and it's so, like, unsung in many ways, but
yeah.
After this movie, I hope it's undeniable to everybody, you know?
Yeah. And I especially like the details that you guys captured. Like when Maddie entered the room and she told her mom she was pregnant, but the flinching, the little slight flinching that Denise does, because she's expecting the explode also. And then when they're out singing, you guys captured the look on Denise's face, like the,
right.
Like, I let my mom down, I let the sisters down, and she's feeling so much. Like, you can read so many emotions just by when you guys, you know, focused in on Denise's face while they were up on the stage singing. Like, it was amazing. Like, I was just, but when she just kind of, like, the little slight flinch, it was just like, wow.
I know. Well, Raven is, she's truly a gifted actress in her own right.
Yes.
And she has great instincts, and she has great presence. So that's the balance, and you know, you have when you're working with veterans,
mm-hmm.
And then the beauty of working with newcomers is like that moment, like I said, when Ingenue scared the bejeebies out of Christina, and it looked real because it was real, like
it was
that's
a real moment.
God, that's like capturing lightning in a bottle,
right.
And just doing that. Day to day for me as a director, oh my goodness, that was so much fun.
Yeah. Did you guys okay? The only thing that was upsetting about this movie was it wasn't long enough, and I think that's universal.
Right.
Everybody felt the same way that they felt like this should have been a miniseries.
He definitely wanted left this wanting
and
for
it
more.
It was so amazing, the story. I mean, like, there's so many layers to the story. The different story for each individual sister.
I know.
And it felt like we got to know a little bit about the whole debacle with Denise, and we got to find out, you know, things about Twinkie and Maddie's situation with Clark. And then when it got to the latter part of the movie, I was like, I need more. This movie is so amazing.
Yeah.
You just wanted more. It's like, this should be a TV show. It was really that good. And watching so many other interviews and reviews, there was the one thing that everybody took away from the movie. Like, we needed more. This was just so much. It was so intense. And the acting and the music and the direction that from you. And it's just like, this could have been a mini series or even, you know, something like based off of the life of like TV show or something.
Yeah.
It was just so good.
Well,
you know,
it was a lot packed into it. And I knew initially when I was shooting, I told the producers, I'm like, this should be a two-nighter. At the very least. And I know that's something they looked into, but by the time Lifetime greenlit it, it was like probably already sold as a 2-hour movie. So once you kind of step into that paradigm, it's hard to reverse engineer it, I guess. So that's why so much was packed into that short amount of time. And the good thing is, when you're left wanting more, that's always a great thing. As a director,
Absolutely.
Rest of it in terms of what they could do afterwards, that is above my pay grade. I did my job, you know.
We would not be mad if they come out with a part two. I'm telling you,
just continue to direct it so it can go in the same streamline.
Right.
You know, it would be so sad for you to have this awesome. We've been saying awesome, but this. Amazing production and storytelling, as you say, and then they come back and then it's not as great as the first one, kind of like the sequels normally are, you know.
Yeah.
Again, that's above my pay grade, but there's a lot of life to unpack still with the Clark sisters. You could do a 2-hour movie on each sister, and it could be fascinating because all of them have their own stories and they're just fascinating on so many levels, you know. So, but I'm also from the camp of leave a good thing alone. So, who knows? You know what I mean? Like, if it took 15 years to just get this movie, but it has momentum. It can keep going, but. You know, I'm thinking like of Soul Food, I guess. They did a TV series based on a movie. So it's absolutely possible, you know. It's just.
Well, can you tell us what you might have in the pipeline now?
So there's no limit to like my imagination. So there are a lot of things that I could do. So one is I have a musical movie of my own, which is akin to a Black La La Land. So I'm working on putting pieces of that together. I've been approached by another music icon to tell that biopic story. So that remains to be seen once I solidify some of the details. You know, and the paperwork to do that, possibly. I just pitched a TV series to a network that I will oversee as a producer and director.
Awesome.
I'm working on a documentary film about a singer named Ava Cherry. And Ava Cherry, same background for Luther Van Ross for 10 years, alongside Lisa Fisher. But for the first 10 years of her life, she was a rock singer in Europe, and she dated David Bowie and sang background for him. So I'm doing a film about her life and her story that will be in a documentary format. And then I just have 4 scripts of my own that I've written, you know, the time where I was a mom, a stay-at-home mom, or
right.
I was writing, like, nonstop. I have, like, 4 scripts, like, ready to go. So there's no end to what – and that's just my stuff. And then I've been approached by a lot of people to direct films that I didn't write. So there's a lot that I'm entertaining. How I like to approach what I do next is whatever is funded and whatever falls in line with my own sensibilities, and I have to feel like there's something that I can contribute to the storytelling. And so,
right.
So we'll see. So, you know, with the pandemic and all, it's kind of hard to pinpoint exactly what to do next, but I feel like I have a lot of different options. But what I'm most looking towards or forward to doing is something that I can elevate the storytelling in that's new and that magnifies us in a unique way and entertaining way. And that's the kind of stuff that I think I'm really good at, and I'm looking to do that next.
Oh, that's amazing. And we look forward to seeing, like, all these projects. And I'm pretty sure, like, now after doing the Mickey Howard and the Clark Sisters movie, and people see how you are able to, you know, direct a actress or actor into bringing the character to life. And mm-hmm. I think now people are looking like, hey, I want you to do my biopic too. So what is the process? Okay, so like some of our listeners that may have came up with ideas and they write stories and they want to pitch to TV shows or pitch a movie idea or something like that. What is the process that a person would have to go through to kind of get their work off the ground or get it to the right hands or who, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of like asking, how do I win the lottery? And not to make it seem so hard, but remember Holly Carter took 15 years to get a movie about the Clark sisters greenlit.
Right.
You know, so the process would be write a great script or have a great script written. So make sure the story resonates on the page, right? And then the next process is for somebody who has no – see, this whole industry is predicated on relationships, not talent. Not, you know, like, yeah, some talent, but really at the end of the day – I mean, you've seen some really bad movies made by mediocre, talented people. So it's not about the best and the brightest all the time. It's really about negotiating relationships and getting somebody on board who can champion your script, who can then get it to the right people who can greenlight it, you know? So that whole process, that's like hitting the lottery, for real, dude. It's hard for people who are outside of the industry. But it's even hard for people who are in the industry, too.
Because mm-hmm. it's based off of who you know.
It is a little bit, a lot of it like that, but it's a lot of politicking to get in front of the right people, to pitch it, to greenlight it, and then cast the right people. And it's you have to work with so many different people to make everything happen. So, not to discourage folks, because it's a very good time to break into this industry, but just understand that it takes time. And I always tell people it takes like a minimum of 10 years of grunt work before you can crack open that wall to get to first base, you know? Everyone I've ever told that to, especially if they're young, they don't believe that. And I remember saying that to this young guy one time. He was like, "No, I'm gonna do this. It's not gonna take me that long." And it's been 10 years, and he's just starting to break through. So I
just
know
like
he's what I told him. It's like Malcolm Gladwell wrote this in his book. I want to say Blink. I could be wrong. It could be the second book, but it's called the 10,000-hour rule. And to be a master at something, you minimally have to spend 10,000 hours at it until you break through, you know, if you break through, but minimally that. So I just found that to be true as well in this industry, that you have to put that work in. Hopefully you're putting the work in and learning how to write. And I teach writing at the University of Georgia. And some of the things I have to share with my students all the time is I cannot teach talent.
Wow.
But I can teach you the fundamentals of screenwriting. I cannot give you an imagination. But I can give you bullet points or ideas as to how to trigger your imagination. So with all that being said, what I know to be true is this. Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. So that's why I tell my kids all the time, I don't care how talented you are. If you don't hone that gift and if you don't work on that talent, there are people who are going to come by you and surpass you because they just work hard. Like, I always think of Will Smith. Will Smith will tell you that. I'm not the greatest actor in the world, and we know that to be true on some level about Will Smith. But he's no Denzel Washington. He's no Denzel Washington. But Will Smith is a movie star. You understand?
Right.
He eclipsed Denzel Washington, actually, in terms of his star power around the world. Now,
exactly.
How and why? And he will tell you. Because he worked harder than anybody else to get to where he is. So there's no limit to what's possible. And I'm not the person to say that because I'm working on my own possibilities. As it pertains to other people who want advice, I'm telling you, you can't cheat the system. You can get a lucky break and you can break through. But does it mean it's sustainable luck? Luck is not sustainable. But luck comprised with hard work over time, your chances are good, you know?
Exactly.
That's like a fine wine. You know, you can make a wine right now and drink it, but the more time it takes to ferment, the better it tastes.
Right.
Exactly. It's amazing.
Yeah. It has been my experience, really, that it just takes time. I've been working in this industry for over 25 years, and you're just hearing about me because I did the Clark Sisters. I mean, granted, you saw the Mickey Howard story, but think about it. From Mickey Howard to Clark Sisters, that's almost 4 years, you know?
Yeah.
So things take time, and great things take great time, but it's always worth it, I think, when you bank on yourself, you know?
Yeah. Any of your kids want to go into the business?
So my oldest son, who's 19 years old, is a freshman at NYU Film School, and he's studying to be a director.
Following his mother's footsteps.
Literally at NYU, too, yeah.
Has he done any, like, small projects, short films, or... any like because I know a lot of the younger people are doing short films online now, get together with some people and they.
Well, he's been making short films since the fifth grade, and I didn't Papa Joe him, you know what I mean? Like I didn't Dr. Maddie Moss Clark him. I didn't force him to do stuff and practice. He just gravitated towards it, and like I was like. Why don't y'all get a real job, you know? But and not that what I do is not a real job. It's just unpredictable, you know? And I thought I'm not going to push any of my kids into this because it's so much work. And I don't know if they have the grit or the wherewithal to do it. And if they do choose to do it, then they have to be passionate by themselves. Because there are many a days where you're sitting at home by yourself crying, wondering, like, am I going to make it through? So they have to have their own determination to want to do this. And from what I've seen of him since the fifth grade, he's always modeled that, you know. And you know, honestly, I can't do what I do and what I've been able to do in terms of, you know, as proud as I am of my movies, I'm equally, if not more, proud of my family and my four children. And none of that, I could not build any of that without my partner in crime and husband, Michael Swanson, who himself is an executive, a studio executive at NBC Universal, and he oversees a lot of their hit TV shows. But before that, we still do have our own production company called Faith Filmworks, through which we create our own content. And Michael and I have been doing this as we went to Notre Dame together. So we've been together 30 years, married for 26. And when Spike Lee came to campus, well, thank you. When Spike Lee came to campus, I not only changed my major, my husband Michael changed his major from government to filmmaking too. So we both did it together as undergrads. And then when I was at grad school at NYU, he was actually working at NBC at Rockefeller Center, and he produced all of my short films because he had access to a phone and a fax. And we just kind of grew up together in the industry. And even now, all those projects that I'm talking about that I'm doing, it is through our production company for which we still run together. So it definitely is a family affair in the Swanson household.
That's awesome. It's totally awesome to actually be together for 30 years in that industry. You know, that's almost like 100 years in Hollywood, you know. But it's amazing to see, you know, a family working together and in the same industry, in the same type of field. And then it's also amazing that your son, you didn't push him into it, but he just kind of probably admired you both from afar and just kind of, you know, went into the, you know, directing thing at NYU. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so we want to.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ms. Christine.
Again, I'm going to demystify the amazing part and just say, I just thought of it as something that was interesting to me, and I was afforded an opportunity to study it as an undergrad, and then pursue those studies on a graduate level. And today, I don't know that it's necessary for people to go to film school because so much information is available online, and you can save maybe $100,000, you know, in tuition costs. So I feel like it's wide open now in ways that it wasn't before for me when the first feature film I shot was on 35 millimeter. Nobody is really shooting on film now. Because of the digital medium and the access to technology, it's just wide open for storytellers to show up and show out.
Yeah, especially the way social media works now. Is, you know, like we had Terry Dexter on yesterday, and she was like, you know, we're talking about the process of, like, now you don't need a big record company behind you anymore. You can literally create your own content and promote yourself. And I see so many amazing stories on different platforms that people have gotten together with other talented friends and things like that and made, like, short films and even web series and things like that without any backing from a film company or anything. Just kind of just, you know, went out there and created their own content. And you have all this these devices where you can download and edit your own videos and everything like that. So, I mean, I kind of agree with you. You know, maybe it's not like it was before going to school for 4 years to learn it when you can just get into it and maybe apprenticeship work or something like that and work under somebody else, you know?
Well, you know, people often ask me about, they ask me like, oh, can you be my mentor? And I say to them, you have access to so many mentors now, okay, because of social media, the internet, and you can learn other people's stories through interviews. Like I've done now over 20 interviews just on the Clark Sisters alone. If you were to look at all those interviews, guess what? I have essentially mentored you, and we haven't even met, right? So
right.
I think it's a great opportunity for people to be mentored, but I often caution people not to directly reach out to people and ask, can you be my mentor? Because I don't know you, you know, and mentorship is really a relationship, you know. So, you know, if you could organically be in a relationship with someone, then you are de facto being mentored by them. But you don't have to ask to be mentored by them, per se. So I often encourage people to just study people. Go look up your interviews, like, you know, and don't assume that people have time out of their lives to just specifically mentor you, but make sure if you're going to do the ask, that it's set up in such a way that you have an organic relationship with someone, and it's easier for them to mentor you. So, and, you know, I often say, I have four kids to mentor, you know, and I'm happy to give advice to a lot of people, but just be a little bit creative in terms of how to seek out that advice. And if you really do the homework, it's there. It's all there, you know. So this is a great time to be a student of the craft and learn from so many people who've gone before you who talk about their craft all the time.
Wow. And it's definitely a time to I mean, a lot of people, like for myself, my state is still on lockdown. So these 3 to 4 months that we've all been on, like, quarantine, it's definitely a perfect time to just kind of, like, hone your craft, study, you know, develop some new skills, you know, take advantage of the time off and just kind of, like, learn something new. Or just, like you said, you know, just get better at, you know, what you're trying to achieve.
Right.
So.
Well, that's valuable nugget of information.
Yeah, definitely. From one of the best. And like I said, I know this award season, you guys are going to just do so great. I mean,
listen, on many levels, it's great to win awards or what have you. What I'm finding about the Clark Sisters is it has moved the population in their hearts, you know, and it's become a cultural phenomenon, right?
Right.
Now, like, let's take the Emmys, for example. Those are all white voters and mostly Jewish, you know? It's like you wonder if it has that crossover appeal where people who aren't, well, I'm assuming y'all black, so I don't know. I'm black. I think y'all black, but
yeah.
You know. Right?
Yeah.
So, how do we assume that the white voters will understand the impact and the historical nature of the way that we did the storytelling? Could they appreciate that? My prayer is yes. And particularly in this award season, I'm really hopeful that they can look at Anjanue Ellis and understand that she didn't just play a role. She created a memory by playing a role of an icon in an iconic way. Like, you know, and I know, this is going to go down in history forever, and people are going to be referencing Anjanue Ellis playing Maddie Moss, Dr. Maddie Moss Clark, right?
It's already on all the memes online,
right.
Social media. Yeah.
That's right. So, when it comes to awards, I know that we think collectively it's worthy, you know, but the people who vote for them don't look like us. And
right.
I hope that they understand the magnitude of the storytelling and what it means to culture, and because it's black culture, not to diminish it as less worthy.
So in that process of the Emmys voting process, the voters have to actually watch the content.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you are a Jewish person and you don't practice the same faith, will that translate over? If they have the same emotions that, you know, people that resonate with that story would have?
I think it's more on the line of being a good storyteller, like you touch them in some way. Am I correct?
I pray that that's how, in the way that you were touched, I pray that it's universal. And that's, again, that's the power to me of our gospel music, in that it's not mere entertainment. And you can't listen to that and not be affected, you know? So I hope this is a time that this kind of storytelling crosses over culturally in a way that others can see it and understand the magnitude and the significance of the Clark sisters and Dr. Maddie Moss Clark. So that's my hope. So I say all that to say, I appreciate you saying this is going to win all the awards, because what I'm hearing is it's so meaningful to you that it's awards worthy. And in many ways, that's enough for me. I'm not trying to underplay, like, just in case I don't win anything. It really, I can honestly tell you, that doesn't matter to me, because in your voices and in what I'm hearing and what you have expressed to me, I feel like a winner already, you know?
You are.
And anything else is cherry on top, you know?
Yeah, you guys made history. I mean, 13 million people tuned in to watch this movie. I mean, that's amazing. I mean, and especially, I'm pretty sure there were some naysayers when it came to, like, pitching this movie about four women in the gospel industry, and how would that translate over to a secular audience? You know, would people want to watch something like this? And then for this movie to do what it did, and you guys made history. I mean, that's just amazing to me. So even like you said, I still feel like you are amazing. I think what you've done with this movie, the direction that you put into this movie, I think it translated over to so many people, and so many people were emotionally affected by this movie, and that's why they told their, you know, cousins, their moms, their friends to tune in. If you haven't watched it, you need to watch this film. Promoting it online, I think that's a testament of your skills.
I think, in my opinion, is not only did you speak to the multitude, which storytelling is an African thing, So not only did you do that, but you activated a legend. Do you understand what I'm saying? You told the story in a way that it is now, like, legendary. It told a piece of somebody else's story. And if I was to ever write a memoir or want someone to tell my story, I would want it to be told in that light of what I've done and what I've accomplished, or, you know, just you did such an immaculate job with that movie. And when I say that, I'm telling you, I'm going to watch it again. I bought the movie, actually. So kudos and the hats off to you. I like the fact that you're very humble about it. But continue doing what you're doing, because it does speak to people. And even though that was something that happened in their lives, people can relate to it.
Yeah, I grew up with the same family dynamic with five sisters, one brother. I'm speaking for my mom and her siblings. My mom has five sisters, and, you know, my grandma had one son. And it's like the same thing, and like so many elements of their story reflected into my own family, and it's just so amazing. I think a lot of people connected with it, you know.
Well, I'm from Detroit. I don't know if you guys knew that.
I did.
Okay, and so when I had the opportunity to interview for this movie, I was actually on a track to DirecTV, and I remember one of my colleagues saying to me, like, Christine, you can't stop directing television to direct a Lifetime movie. And I'm like, but it's the Clark sisters. you know? And, like, he didn't understand that. He was like, but, you know, you're not, like, a Lifetime director. And I'll be honest with you. Lifetime gave us a good budget. They gave us good systemic support when we shot this in Canada. And, you know, I haven't done a biopic for Mickey Howard and not having all the budget and the resources that we needed, I was like, this is great. This is great. Like, I can do something with this. So,
right.
You know, just to dispel the myth that it's Lifetime, look what's possible at Lifetime. This is one of their biggest hits in 4 years and probably will go down in history as one of their most successful films, if not the best biopic ever done at Lifetime. So even for Lifetime, look at what's possible when you work with people who are visionaries.
Right.
And myself, but with an Anjanou Ellis, who's a visionary. And there's a lot of work that went into that script that Anjanou brought to the table that just took it to another level. And when you can support visionaries like that, this is what happens. But and let's also say that we also got a great story and a great subject matter to tell too. So you bring all that those elements together, hey, we're cracking. We got a chance at cracking at something that is historic. And I felt that kind of energy as we were making this movie, and I definitely felt that on the first day of shooting with Anjanou, and she kicked into that Dr. Maddie Moss Clark mode, and I was like jaw dropped. Like,
and she stayed okay. In character the whole entire time, right? Off camera and on camera.
Yes, she did sometimes, and it was like a little scary because people were just like, they would just leave her alone and would be scared of her. But the funny thing is, like, you will not meet a more kind-hearted human being in your life who is also a walking genius. You know what I mean? Like, so she just functions in that, and she's a little bit of an introvert anyway. You wouldn't think so because her acting is just so phenomenal and robust. Like, then when she's not filming, she just kind of like shrinks into her little introverted self and like is like not always easily approachable because she's shy, you know.
Yeah.
And when she was in Maddie Moss Clark mode, it was like, yeah, I'll just wait on my question. You know, not for me though. Like, I was like, girl, let's go. We're about to do this. So she's fun to work with, and she made everybody better. Everybody better.
Amazing.
You know? So that's the kind of talent that you want to work with. So I was like, I didn't care what the outlet was. It didn't matter to me, like, it was Lifetime. Like, when I did the Mickey Howard story, I wasn't thinking, like, this is a TV One movie. I'm like, this is the Mickey Howard story. We gonna do it up, you know?
Right.
And that's what I felt about the Clark Sisters movie. I might as well have been making an HBO movie. It did not matter to me what the outlet was. It was like what Dr. Maddie Moss Clark said. We don't do easy. We do excellent.
Excellent. So
if we all aspire for excellence, what's possible? You know, what's possible? So I think it took Lifetime by surprise, you know, but I would challenge Lifetime and say, look what's possible when you aim for excellence, you know. And not that they don't. I don't know. I've never worked at Lifetime before. I just know that I'm not a Lifetime director. I'm not a TV One director. I'm a director, and whatever I do, and especially when it comes to telling the stories of living legends, I ain't dropping the ball. So, and ain't nobody
Amazing.
Around me are gonna drop the ball. You know, like it's.
And
like,
I hope
I
you continue.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just gonna say, I hope you continue to tell stories of our living legends and our legends that have passed on, in such a way that it translates like these movies have, because they need to be honored in such a way that you have done for the Clark Sisters and Mickey Howard, you know.
Well, remember when I told you when I was thinking of going to film school, and my primary goal was to tell stories about us in beautiful ways that I don't particularly see all the time. When I get an opportunity to do movies about real people, for me, it's like I'm giving back to my community of black folks who raised me. And, well, there's a little story I should tell. I'm half Korean and half black. And my parents divorced when I was 7, and my Korean mother left me and my brother with my black dad. So my single black dad raised me, and he was in the military. He retired from the military and moved to Detroit. And I was then raised by my grandmother and her sister, my great aunt. So these women, like Southern women from Mississippi, after having raised their own children, took me and my brother under their wings and then raised another set of children, you know? I will never forget that. I will never forget being incorporated into a family and a community as a Blasian chick. And being loved and deposited with lessons and church. They took me to church. I was raised in a church because of these women, and gave me a foundation that I would not have had had they not taken me under their wings. So I just feel like I have a duty to reflect back and to give back to our culture in the ways that so much was deposited inside of me. And coming into blackness as almost as an immigrant, because I lived in Korea for my first 6 years of life. I only spoke Korean. And when I came to Detroit, I was 8 years old. I just learned English. And then I landed in Detroit, and I don't know what these kids are speaking, you know? It was slang or Ebonics. And I had to just learn a whole new culture. And in doing so, to see blackness from the outside first before I came to the inside of it. And how whatever impression that left upon me, I think helped me to become a storyteller through images. Because, like, for the first 2 years in Detroit, I didn't really talk because I didn't know how to talk this language. I didn't know how to relate. It took me years to understand it. And then, but now you can't shut me up. But I was able to observe just the complexity of black culture in the way that I did. So when I come across a Mickey Howard, or when I come across, treat it like as precious. I treat the privilege to tell their life stories as a precious privilege to show the world all the greatness, the complexity, and the beauty that I got to experience and see as kind of like an immigrant coming into black culture, you know? So sometimes I see blackness in ways that black people don't. Like, almost God orchestrated that. He divinely orchestrated that. And then was like, okay, now you're going to be a filmmaker, okay? So I'm always looking at things in ways where I'm digging, where I'm just zooming straight into the heart. So if you were moved in your heart and in your emotions, that's because that's the lens in which I like to see us. And that's why that what I do in terms of storytelling feels different from anything you see, because, again, I was privileged with an opportunity to see, to learn, to study, and to seek out things about us in ways that maybe most people don't, you know? So I'm always looking to do that when it comes to our stories. It's like, how can I see deeper, you know, and how can I relay that with emotional connection?
That's amazing. I want to thank you for coming on and taking the time out. It's such an honor to have this time with you. We really, 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 really are grateful for you to take the time out to spend on a Sunday, spend some time. Mm-hmm. And we really enjoyed learning from you and hearing all these special gems that you just dropped on us. And I, like I said, I really hope that you are able to continue to tell our stories in such a way that you have done. It's amazing to actually be able to speak with you, and that you're just that humble enough to, you know, join our platform and spend time with us. This whole platform is basically created for, like, we, it's basically in a sense to acknowledge people in our culture that don't get the same type of praise
accolades.
As most people, and yeah, accolades and praise as people on the mainstream level. You know, it's basically like if you are in front of the camera, behind the camera, whatever it may be, we just want to give everyone, you know, their accolades and their praise. And this platform is essentially created for those people, like our legends, that don't have a platform. I was essentially, like, after the death of Betty Wright, and they showed a clip of the Monique Show, and we were just talking, like, man, I wish we had something for the culture like the Monique Show that, you know, it brought on our A-list, our C-list, our whatever, our legends, our people just coming into the business. And that's essentially what our podcast is about. And I just want to thank you again for taking the time out of your day to come here.
Well, it's absolutely my pleasure. And let me know going forward whatever I can do to help, because I'm getting vibes from you two. Like, this feels like the Breakfast Club to me. And I've never been on the Breakfast Club, but darn it, this comes close. So keep doing what you guys are doing, because I just
thank
feel
you.
Like you guys are onto something really, really necessary and urgent.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you could put in some ears for we have Angela Burchett coming on Friday, but I would love to have the actual, you know, someone from the Clark family camp to come on and speak about the you know, the film or something like that, if that's possible. If not, but moving forward,
well,
let me
see if I can put some phone calls in, but you definitely should try to get Angenue Ellis on your show too. So let's see if we can work that out as well.
Oh, amazing. Amazing. Thank you.
All right.
That would be an honor. So thank you.
My pleasure. Let's keep uplifting us.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
All right.
All right.
All the best to you guys, and thank you for having me.
Thank you
for
being here.
All right. Take care, guys. Bye-bye.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay. Thank you for joining the Every Artist Podcast. We're going to close out with one of the new songs from the Clark Sisters. It's called Masterpiece. It's produced by Jermaine Dupri. Album's out in stores right now. Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Mae Santiago. And
Lisa.
Thank you.
got no sauce. You good.